Hey there, it's Danny Eney. I'm the executive producer at Miracy FM, which is the network that publishes the show you're about to listen to. I'm stepping in to let you know about an exciting opportunity for you to create more leverage and freedom in your business, because we're opening the doors to a brand new program called the Course Freedom Formula, which is perfect for coaches, consultants, and experts who want to grow their impact. In the program, you'll build and launch a successful online course in just 12 weeks. And it's based on over a decade of experience and insight into building profitable online courses. By the end, you'll have chosen your topic, done your market research, built your course, and filled it with paying students. Enrollment is open for just a few days, May 17th through the 21st. To learn more about the program and to see how you can get more freedom in your business, head to miracy.fm/course. That's miracy.fm/course. And now, on with the show.
Miracy.
So controlled remote viewing is a written technique or methodology where you sit at a table with paper and pen, and you're literally going to describe a target that is probably pretty far removed from you in time and space. You're going to be totally blind to the target. You'll just be given a number. And if you're given any information at all, it's usually extremely neutral.
Hello, and welcome to Consciousness Explored, where we delve into the mysteries of the human experience and consciousness. I'm your host, Melissa Deal. In each episode, we'll be diving deep into the nature of consciousness, ways to expand our consciousness, and the impact that our understanding of consciousness has on the quality of our daily lives. On today's episode, I've invited Lori Williams. Lori is an accomplished author and professional controlled remote viewer, or CRV. She's an experienced instructor of CRV and an accomplished public speaker who has appeared on many popular radio and television shows and podcasts. With more than two decades of dedicated research and practice, Lori has become a leading figure in the field of remote viewing, guiding CEOs, celebrities, and everyday individuals on profound journeys of consciousness exploration. Her work includes assisting law enforcement in missing persons cases, conducting professional sessions for corporations, working on archaeological mysteries, and a broad range of other topics. I cannot wait to talk with her today. We'll be right back with Lori's story.
When I was a little girl, probably somewhere between 18 months and 2 years old, something happened. The story isn't quite clear. I've heard a few versions of it, but the long story of it is that I had like a near-death experience. I ended up literally dying and they had to revive me. And I think that might have shaped things. Research shows that children who have had near-death experiences tend to be a little different than the norm. I've always been the odd man out, having experiences of psychokinesis, where things move around me unaided. You know, things will fly through the room or chairs will tip over onto their sides. Things just move on their own. And we used to think there were always ghosts around us, but then we figured out that it's probably not ghosts. It's probably just something having to do with my own kinetic energy that causes that. Out-of-body experiences were always a common thing in my life, as well as, you know, seeing spirits, having precognitive dreams that came true, and just having claircognizance where you just know stuff and you don't know how you know it. So that's always been a feature of my youth and my continued life. I was born in Washington State, in Spokane, Washington, and my dad at that time was an ad man. My mom was a 1950s housewife. She eventually started working with my dad when he bought into a series of radio stations that were located in Montana and North Dakota. So when I was about 6 months old, we started moving, and moving became a theme for the rest of my life because we ended up moving about every 3 years as my dad kept climbing the corporate ladder, you know, getting better jobs, higher paying jobs. So he went from being an ad man to being a part owner in radio stations and being a disc jockey and that sort of thing. And then eventually he decided to go back to school, get his PhD at Northwestern. So we lived in Skokie, Illinois for a while. And then we moved on to Athens, Ohio. And then from Athens, Ohio, we ended up in Knoxville, Tennessee, where my mom put her foot down in 1971 and said, "This is it. I'm not moving anymore." And by that time, I was just turning 14. My biggest challenges were that my dad was an alcoholic and my mother had bipolar disorder that was untreated. I was the youngest child in the family. And so a big challenge for me was I was the peacemaker. I had two older sisters. And whenever my mother would fly into rages or have, you know, one of her episodes, they would kind of send me in there to get her in a good mood. It was like trying to walk into the lion's den. I was terrified. My dad was agnostic, and so he never talked about God. My mom had been devout Catholic as a child and then was excommunicated when she got divorced after 6 months of marriage to her first husband. And that soured her on the Catholic Church. So what was really funny, they told me that when John F. Kennedy was assassinated, my mother said to my dad, "We have to go light a candle for John F. Kennedy." So they took me to this massive cathedral in Chicago. And we walked in and I said in a very loud voice, "Hey, who's that guy up there hanging on the cross?" And they were mortified as everyone gasped and turned around, you know, that all these people were praying and all these nuns were there and everyone was horrified. And my dad said quietly, "I think we need to start teaching her something about religion." I got a very scant religious upbringing until I met a bunch of Jesus people in a park right after I turned 14 years old. And I had a really profound experience, you know, a religious experience, I guess. I prefer to say that it was a spiritual experience, though, rather than religious, because I associate religion with a lot of negative things. But anyway, I ended up being very involved with this group from that time until I was 34, when I dissociated myself with that group. My dad was a university professor with a PhD, and education was everything to him. And he just really wanted all of us to get multiple degrees, or even one degree would have made him happy. But I was just eager to get out of the house and head out on my own and do exciting things. And so at the time, I really felt like my calling and my duty was to save the world, save the lost for Jesus, you know? So I got involved really full time with that mission group. After I was in it for a few years, it really devolved into a lot of different things. But once you are in something for a while, it's kind of the Patty Hearst brainwashing thing. You get in there and you just kind of buy into everything. And then you have a lot of time vested in it. And so the thought of leaving is kind of like, oh, well, you know, then I'll prove everybody that told me not to do it. I'll prove them right, you know, and I'll look bad or whatever. And so you don't leave, you just stick with it. And I did meet a lot of really wonderful, dedicated people with whom I'm still friends to this day, really good friends. That group attracted a lot of great, terrific people, even though it turned out to be kind of a weird cult. It attracted some great people who eventually left like I did. I also really wanted to understand all the metaphysical and paranormal things that happened to me my whole life. And when I joined the Jesus People group, I thought, oh, you know, all that's going to stop now because I'm serving the Lord. Oh, but no, it did not. It seemed like it even increased. And so when I left the group, one of the first things I wanted to do with my newfound freedom was to really explore all of these weird things that had happened my whole life and had continued on once I was serving the Lord. I really wanted to explore those things and explore my own abilities.
Lori had a profoundly defining moment one day when she read a statistic that having one verifiable psychic experience in a lifetime was the norm for most people. Prior to that moment, she had just thought that her experiences were pretty common. It was then that she realized that her exceptional experiences must mean something more for her life, and she had to find a way to reconcile the years of belief and effort she had put into what she called her Jesus work. At the time, she was directing a refugee program and had gone to a conference on secondary post-traumatic stress disorder. At the conference, she became drawn to one of the speakers.
There was a psychologist who was the main speaker. I was so in awe of everything he shared. I was fascinated by it. And then they introduced him as a retired colonel. And I thought, oh, that's odd because I just met my very first colonel ever 2 days ago in Amarillo. And I've never met a colonel in my life. And suddenly in 1 week, I've met two colonels. That night, I dreamt that I was asking this guy if he knew the other colonel. So the next day I get to the conference early, and he got there early, and we're standing alone, two strangers, outside these ballroom doors. And I looked at him and I just blurted out, "I had a dream about you last night." And he looked at me startled and he's like, "What did you dream?" And I told him what the dream was. It was just a very simple dream. And he said, "Oh, what branch of the military is this other colonel in?" And I said, I don't know. I think he was involved in military intelligence." And he goes, "Oh, that's interesting, because I was in military intelligence." And right as he said that, the cover of a book that had just come out just flashed in my mind. And I blurted out, "Have you seen that new book?" He's like, "What new book?" And I said, "It's turquoise and black on the cover, and it has something to do with psychics in the military." And he goes, "Are you talking about Psychic Warrior by David Morehouse?" And I said, "Yes, that's the book. I didn't buy it, but I saw it on the new bookshelf. I read the inside cover." And he said, "I can't believe you're asking me about that book, because I'm actually a main character in the book, but I made him change my name so that no one would know it was me." Then he got really interested, because he's like, this total stranger walks up, tells me she has a dream about me, and then asks me about a book that I'm a main character in when she doesn't know me from Adam, you know? So he starts really leaning into my space, and he's like, "Whoa, are you artistic? Do you have a photographic memory for numbers? Do you remember maps easily?" And he just starts asking me these questions, and I'm like backing away because he's leaning into my space and I'm getting kind of freaked out and I'm backing away from him. And then he sees that he's kind of freaking me out. So he says, "When you get home, go on the internet and look up controlled remote viewing." So I wrote it down as soon as I sat down at my place. And then when I got home, that's the first thing I did. I just felt like bells were going off and I was like, you know, this is it. This is what I've been looking for. Because it explained that it's completely normal. All humans have psychic ability. And the only problem is that we can't access it because it's coming from the subconscious mind. And the subconscious mind and the conscious mind don't speak the same language. Controlled remote viewing was something that was developed for U.S. military intelligence to help soldiers separate mere imagination from true psychic perception so that they could be more intuitive in their day-to-day work for the military. And so I was like, wow, okay, this sounds really great. I mean, instead of it being some freaky thing that may or may not be of the devil, and I say that tongue-in-cheek, of course, but at the time I wasn't sure, you know, is it of God or is it of the devil? That was my big fear. And I have to say that, of course, in all the years of practicing CRV since 1996, it has taken away all those fears. We fear that which we don't understand. And as I've done so many sessions, I've come to really befriend that part of myself that is naturally intuitive and learned that it's not at all evil. It's all just a part of every human. And therefore, it's something that we should accept and embrace and be thankful for and really hone it to a fine art.
Thank you, Lori. Your story is so fascinating on so many levels. I want to dive deeper into your work and into remote viewing, of course. But first, let me ask you how you describe, explain, or define consciousness.
That is a really great question. The way that I perceive consciousness personally is almost like a tree that has many, many branches. And we're all a branch on that tree, whether we're a tiny branch or a leaf. But we're all parts of the same tree, and consciousness is the tree. And so the roots of the tree go down and they communicate with the other trees, and maybe the entire field of trees is consciousness.
Oh, that's a beautiful analogy. Thank you. I always love hearing the different ways that people understand consciousness. Let's go ahead and also define for listeners, what is controlled remote viewing?
So controlled remote viewing is a written technique or methodology, where you sit at a table with paper and pen, and you're literally going to describe a target that is probably pretty far removed from you in time and space. You're going to be totally blind to the target. You'll just be given a number. And if you're given any information at all, it's usually extremely neutral. Like, the target is an activity. Describe the target. The target is an event. Describe the target. The target is man-made. Describe the target. The target is a person. Describe the target. We're often not even told it's a person. Sometimes it's the target is biological. Describe the target. And that could be anything from an atom to, you know, to a gorilla or King Kong or whatever. My only intention when I start a target is to give the tasker, the person with the question is called the tasker, to give the tasker the best information, the most accurate information I can give the tasker that would be of greatest benefit to him or her. That's usually my intention. And that's what I think every viewer's intention is. From my experience, though, it seems that it's the intention of the tasker that really guides the session. Even though I may never meet the tasker, we usually have project managers now who act as kind of a liaison between the viewer and the tasker so that the policeman who needs to know the condition of the kidnapped victim, for example, we don't want the viewer to know there was a kidnapping. We don't want the viewer to have all that, because the minute you give the viewer a loaded word like kidnap or, you know, criminal, what do we think of when we think of a criminal? Most people think male. They often think ethnic. They think drug addicted, violent, armed, you know, all these things. And it might be the little old lady that's the most trusted employee who's been embezzling for years. So we tend to have stereotypes and we attach those to loaded words. So if any information is ever given to a remote viewer, it has to be very neutral. So if we wanted a description of a criminal, we would have to say to the viewer, the target is a person. Describe the target. That way we're eliminating all those stereotypes and we just say it's just a person. If we need a description of the kidnapper's car, we could say the target is man-made. Describe the target. The viewer has created and practiced a set of gestaltic symbols, symbols that represent an overall concept. So we start out in basic class teaching the viewers the seven basic gestalts, which are water, land, man-made, space, air, motion, energy, natural, and biological, organic, live, which means anything that is living or has had life. Now, when we say water, for example, we're not talking about a body of water necessarily. We could be, but there's many forms of water. There's water vapor and steam and ice and snow and so many different ways that water appears on this planet. And we're not necessarily even talking about water. It could be wine in someone's glass or the sweat on someone's brow, right? So if people say, well, why don't you use liquid? Well, because sometimes it's not liquid. Sometimes it's ice. Sometimes it's snow. Sometimes it's steam or vapor. So it's not always a liquid. So that's why we call it a gestalt. We talk about it in the form of an overall concept. And then we can get into more and more detail.
Okay, so when you say detail, do viewers bring in other sensory details? Like, do they pick up on things with senses other than sight or like the mind's eye, so to speak?
Yes. So our basic students start out just really focusing on the main senses, the smells, the tastes, the sounds, the textures, things like that. And then as they develop a little more, they start getting into shapes and sizes and patterns and positions, which are dimensional, right? They also pick up on ambiances. And if you think about ambiance, everybody has the sense of ambiance. Who hasn't walked into a room where people were arguing and said, man, the air in here is so thick, you could cut it with a knife, right?
Yeah.
That's the sense of ambiance. You walk into a beautiful chapel like Loreto Chapel in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and there's a sense of sacredness to it, you know, a hushed ambiance. And think about the ambiance in a dark alley, for example, at night. You know, that would be a very spooky ambiance. Even people who are blind or deaf are very much aware of ambiance. So we teach people to sensitize themselves to ambiance by noticing the change when you walk through a doorway. Even if you're in your house where you feel like you're in a safe environment and you go from your bedroom into the bathroom, ask yourself, what's the difference? And just see if you can sense a subtle change in ambiance so that you're sensitizing yourself to subtler and subtler degrees of change. And that heightens your ability to observe, which carries into your remote viewing work.
So really, you're just talking about like practicing awareness and specifically extrasensory awareness.
Exactly. Practicing awareness. And you want to practice awareness in your regular life so that when you sit down to do a remote viewing session or any kind of psychic work, you've already really sharpened your awareness to a fine degree.
Yeah. Well, I want to go back for a minute for anyone who might not realize that remote viewing is not something that is fringe or woo-woo. The validity of remote viewing is something that both our own government and military take very seriously and have studied and practiced for nearly a century now, right? And you, Lori, actually studied under someone intimately involved in that program. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yes. Lynn Buchanan was the database manager for the military unit that ran the Project Stargate. For those who don't know, back during the Cold War, the Russians were getting a lot of U.S. military secrets, and the U.S. government had no idea how they were getting them. And this man defected from Russia carrying documents proving that Russia had a psychic spying program. So the U.S. government said, oh, if they have one and they're actually getting our information from this, we need to figure it out. We need to find out how we can have one, too. So they went to Stanford Research Institute, which was a top secret think tank during those days. And they found two physicists who had helped pioneer the laser, Harold Puthoff and Russell Targ. And they said, hey, guys, this is the problem. We need you to figure this out. So these guys brought in two men. One was named Pat Price. He was a retired detective from Burbank, California. The other was named Ingo Swann. He was an artist from New York City. And they brought them in and they were doing experiments with these guys. They would put them into Faraday cages, which are Nikola Tesla designed cages that keep EMF and other frequencies from invading into this inside the Faraday cage. They wanted to see, you know, can we protect them from any interference when they're trying to psychically access a target? And they would send someone out to a location somewhere in DC and they would say, okay, we want you to focus on where Bill is today. And we want you to sketch where you think you see him. Just close your eyes, tell us what you see. And that's how it started out. Just close your eyes, tell us what you see. The first experiment that really woke them up to the fact that this is for real. We really can't keep secrets anymore if people can psychically access anything in time and space was when they asked this one colonel whose name was Kit Green. And they said, we want you to pick a place and we're going to do an experiment. And we want you to ask Pat Price and Ingo Swann to remote view this place. Don't tell them, make sure they're completely blind to it and just see what they get. So my understanding is that Kit chose his hunting cabin in the woods, but unbeknownst to him, very close by was an underground military installation that was top secret, like need to know status only. And I guess he didn't need to know. So he didn't know that that was there by his hunting cabin. And these guys, instead of going to the hunting cabin, they were drawn to this top secret military underground installation. And they went into a room that had filing cabinets. They stuck their heads psychically into these filing cabinets and they wrote down all the names on the files. The names all were related to billiards, like cue ball, eight ball, you know, that sort of thing. So they wrote down the names and they filled out their report and they send it back to Kit Green, who looks at it and thinks, this doesn't work at all. This is garbage. And he sends it up the ranks to the generals who had initiated the whole experiment. The generals freaked out because these guys listed all these top secret names for projects that no one was supposed to know about. And a huge investigation ensued where they really looked at these guys' bank accounts and all their possessions to see if they could be double agents getting paid by the Russians. But no, they found out they were not. And that's how it actually all began. In the 20 years of research, they ended up with more solid proof that psychic ability, clairvoyance, clairaudience, and all these things are real than the FDA has proving that aspirin is effective as a pain reliever. So that's what the statistics show on this. And I think sometimes people feel threatened, you know, like if this exists, what does that mean to my sense of reality?
Yeah, exactly. What about viewing or sensing something that is foreign to you, like something that the viewer can't readily identify or understand?
Lynn Buchanan was working with this viewer in the military unit. And he was doing a practice target. And the target was a race in Latin America, somewhere in South America. And they use these long boats that are designed to move in shallow water. And they do a race in this shallow water, but the shallow water is full of boulders that are just below the surface. So they have a guy that sits in the front of the boat and he's looking for the boulders and he's telling the guy in the back how to steer the boat. And the guy in the back is standing there with a long pole and he's steering the boat with this pole in the ground, you know, but it's in South America. So everything's in Spanish and the viewer didn't have any knowledge of Spanish and was totally blind to the target. And so he's describing stuff and then he goes, I'm hearing sounds. They sound like human voices and they're saying something that sounds like Recha, Recha, Scarda, Scarda. Well, I don't know if you speak Spanish, but I do. And derecha and izquierda means right and left. So the guy in the front of the boat is telling the guy in the back, go to the right, go to the left. And he's speaking Spanish. The viewer is viewing this thing in a totally different location, in a totally different time, in a totally different language. And he's actually able to hear what's being said enough to repeat it in a language he doesn't speak. I mean, that is like amazing. So if If you were a skeptic and you said, oh, this is bullshit, there's no way that this is true. If you experienced something like that, it would make a believer out of you.
Yeah. And no one can tell you that that's not true after that. That's why, you know, personal experience and experiential data is so important and should be considered more valid than it is generally considered.
I think so, too. And that's why, you know, when I was getting started, the first thing I wanted to do was create a free class, because people have to be able to experience this for themselves without paying for it. Because if they don't experience it, they'll never believe that it's real. They have to experience it. People are really clamoring to explore the limits of their own consciousness. You know, consciousness is the new frontier. It really is. You know, we think about outer space and we think about the depths of the ocean, which we know very little about, actually. We actually know more about the moon. And we think about these things and we think, wow, these places are so cool. I would love to explore outer space. I would love to explore the ocean. But in reality, consciousness, which is something that's with you all the time, is the new frontier. It is so amazing to explore.
Oh, yeah, it really is. Whole new world, right? Well, speaking of opening up a whole new world, what would you say is the biggest impact that your experience with remote viewing has had on your life personally?
So I had a terrible fear of heights. I was terrified of heights. It would paralyze me if I had to do anything up high. I couldn't do fun stuff like roller coasters or, you know, anything like that. And so Lynn noticed that. He started seeing that anytime I had to view something up high, I would just shut down. So he started actually giving me a lot of height targets mixed in with other targets in my practice so that I became desensitized to heights, to the point that I have since then done bungee jumping. I've done parasailing. I've done a lot of roller coasters. You know, it really helped me to overcome the fear of heights. There were several teachers out there at the time, but Lynn was really the right teacher for me because he was raised a Baptist. He had been a Methodist minister. And so he really knew how to handle this girl who was coming off the mission field and very caught up in a really strong binary belief system. And I say binary because it was black and white, you know, good and evil, God and the devil. I mean, everything was pretty binary. And now it's quite expanded, my belief system. And all the fears that I had have really fallen away. And I think I have more faith now than I ever had. But back in the day, I was always so afraid of displeasing God and afraid of this and afraid of that. I had so many fears. And now I don't really fear much of anything.
That's terrific. And I can really relate to that. We've touched on a lot today, probably enough to give listeners at least a few things to think about and research for themselves. As we wrap up, what is one thing you'd like to leave listeners with as it pertains to your work and the expansion of consciousness?
My mission is to raise consciousness on the planet. And if enough people really learn about themselves and explore themselves in a way where they're expanding beyond the limits of what they thought they could do, and they're letting their minds expand beyond this moment in reality and go into other places and other times, you get to know yourself so well. It's such a great personal development tool that never gets emphasized, right? It's all about, oh, let's remote view ETs or let's remote view mysteries. But what about getting to know yourself? You have to live with yourself a long time, right? You can't get away from yourself. So what about coming to know yourself and love yourself and getting to know an aspect of yourself that you never even realized that you could do? You also really come to realize that you're part of a greater whole. You know, the Bible says God is love. Well, I got a whole new respect for what love really is. And it's a very powerful force. It is the only constant amid all universes and all dimensions. And if God truly is love, then love is God, right? So we can worship love and we can all love each other because we're all part of the same thing. Think about schools of fish and how they move through the ocean in unison, or how the starlings in the sky, they're big clouds of birds that are all moving in unison, or the V-shaped geese flying south for the winter. We're all connected. We are all one and we're all connected. And that's truly what consciousness is. I had an experience where someone came and got me out of my body one night, and that's been a common theme for me as well. But someone came and got me out of my body, and we shot up into outer space, and the earth became very tiny. And then suddenly we were coming back, and the earth was getting bigger. And suddenly the arms let go of me, and I was falling towards this forest, and I was watching the trees coming up towards me as I was falling. And suddenly I was falling back up towards the sky. And when I looked up, the trees were up in the sky, and I was going towards them in the sky, the opposite direction. And this voice said very clearly, reality is not what we think it is. And I woke up. And I was like, oh my gosh, we could be living in a virtual reality. We could be living in a construct. And a lot of the things that we think are real may not even be as real in the way that we perceive them. So I just want to ask the listeners to expand their thoughts of what is possible. And once you do that, there's no limit. You can manifest anything in your life. You can attract anything that you want. You can live a truly magical lifestyle. And so that's what I want to encourage them. You don't have to be limited by what you've been taught. You can truly live a magical life.
Wow. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me. It was great to meet you.
And Lori, where can listeners find out more about you and what you're doing? And I know you still have that free masterclass, so tell us about that.
If you go to my website at intuitivespecialist.com with an S at the end of specialist, intuitivespecialists.com. And on my website, you'll see a free masterclass right there at the top. And it'll even have a pop-up on your screen that'll say, want to take the free class? I encourage you to take it. It's not a sales pitch. It's a true class because my purpose in creating it was so that you could experience controlled remote viewing without having to pay for it. And it's an initial class. It's about what I teach on the first day of my 3-day workshop. So there's all kinds of free material on my website. You could literally spend 2 months just learning about remote viewing from free stuff on my website. And then if you really want to dive in deeper, a lot of my courses now are available as video courses. And I have 2 books out, Boundless, Your How-To Guide to Practical Remote Viewing. And I have Monitoring. It's the only book that's ever been written on controlled remote viewing monitoring. And that's something you would read after you've taken a class from me. I mean, this is a school where you can start out from scratch and go all the way to become a world-class professional remote viewer.
Fantastic. We'll have all that in the show notes. Now you guys stick around for my thoughts on my chat today with Lori. I really did enjoy my conversation with Lori. And while I do definitely find remote viewing fascinating, it was more the subtle undertones of Lori's story and work that stood out to me. Because at the core of consciousness expansion is our ability to navigate through and beyond what can often be a very congested intersection of our beliefs, emotions, and personal experiences. Lori talked about creating her free masterclass so that people could start to experience the possibilities of remote viewing, because as she put it, if people don't experience it for themselves, they'll never believe it. And I definitely see her point. So let's dig into that a little bit, because personal experience is still going to be filtered through the lens of our individual beliefs and emotions. Therefore, even experiencing is not always believing. To expand consciousness to the degree that we're able to navigate life with true freedom and power, we have to be open and curious about possibilities that may not be a part of our current belief systems. And why is that? Because any belief system that is closed to possibilities outside of that belief system is, by very definition, incomplete and limited. And without being able to at least consider all the information available, we can never have an accurate picture of what possibilities truly exist. For example, let's say that someone who identifies as Christian has a personal experience like a spontaneous healing. Because of their belief system, they will most likely understand that experience within the parameters of their Christian ideology. And that might be as far as they can take it. That's not to pick on Christians, not by any means. I just use that as an example, because the same goes for anyone attached to a belief system of any kind. If someone who is Jewish experienced the exact same miraculous healing as the Christian did, they would understand their experience through the lens of their own beliefs. Same healing, different perceived causes. A Christian might say, Jesus healed me. Then I ask, who healed the Jewish man that doesn't share your belief in Jesus? How does the Christian reconcile that answer without being willing to open to curiosity and possibilities outside of their own ideology? Some might say, Jesus healed the Jewish man so that he could get out of his wrong Jewish religion and go testify for Jesus. But what if the Jewish man doesn't do that? What if he continues to maintain both his Jewish beliefs and his healing? What then? You see where this goes? And what about when someone has a personal experience that goes against their own belief system? For example, many dogged atheists and physicalists have had out-of-body experiences or near-death experiences, but their belief systems do not support having such an experience. If they're rigidly attached to their belief systems, the cognitive dissonance between experience and belief often results in psychological issues, mental and emotional anguish, and sometimes some pretty serious suffering, for which the only relief is opening up the boundaries of those current beliefs. Lori talked about how reconciling her personal experiences with her beliefs led her to leave behind the missionary work that she put so many years and so much effort into, and that she was very attached to. That's not easy to do, but why do we get so attached to our belief systems? And why are they so difficult to change? How can we expand more easily? We attach to our beliefs out of fear. Most of us have a fear-based belief that we need to define ourselves in some way that makes us appropriate by whatever standards we adopt as true, whether those standards are religious, social, political, cultural, or anything else. Many of us want to be right, to be good, to be considered acceptable by the standards that we adopt, regardless of their arbitrary nature or broader relevance. As a rule, if we buy into the fear, we attach to the belief. All belief systems that include boundaries of any kind are fear-based, and we attach to them with our subconscious mind and our ego. Our ego is our physical mind, and it has one job, and that job is to protect us. But our physical mind has a very limited scope of information that is fed to it primarily from our five senses and the subconscious mind. The subconscious mind has an even more narrow scope of information, but that doesn't matter to the ego. The ego's job is to believe the subconscious mind and provide protection, no matter how limited and confined the scope of the beliefs may be. Most of us live entirely within the boundaries of our subconscious and ego mind, and that's why we suffer and perceive the possibilities of our lives and our potential to be so small and limited. But we do have another mind, one that few of us use on a regular basis. It's our higher mind, and we all have one. This mind has a broad perspective, like a bird's eye view. It's our energetic mind, our non-physical mind. Some might call it our soul or our spirit. This higher mind is directly connected to all that is, to the field of all information and infinite possibilities. This mind can see beyond the fears of the subconscious mind and beyond the limitations of the physical or ego mind. This mind is the one we use when remote viewing, for example. It's not bound by time or space. It's not bound by physical limitations, fears, or beliefs. We can access it at any time, but we restrict our access to this part of us through our belief systems and our fear. To me, one of the biggest beliefs that holds us back from accessing this higher mind is our misunderstanding of the proper order and function of these three minds. So let's talk about that. I like to use the example of those little Russian nesting dolls. If you don't know what they are, Google them. But basically, they're a set of dolls nearly identical in all but their size. Each one is hollow and they nest within each other so that it looks like there's only one doll until you open it up and find a smaller doll. And then you open that one up and find yet another. Picture that our multifaceted, multidimensional being that makes up our human self is similar to these dolls. Multiple parts all nested within each other and working together. But our misunderstanding of the order of these nesting dolls, I think, is where we miss the mark. We're conditioned to view the largest doll, the outermost doll, as our physical mind. We think it's the biggest, most important, and most capable. After all, it's the one that can interpret everything we see, touch, taste, and feel. We think of the next smallest doll nested within that outermost doll as our subconscious mind. The things brewing within, below the surface, our fears and beliefs and our shadow. Then lastly, we consider the smallest innermost doll to be our soul or spirit, that which connects us to whatever we consider the source or the divine. With this understanding or perspective, it's only natural that we place total importance and give total rein to our ego or physical mind because we think it's the most valuable. It's the biggest. We think it's the outermost doll, so it's the most relevant. We think it has the most information and the most ability to get us where we want to go. And we view the tiny soul doll as being buried deep inside and probably being the least relevant to a physical human experience. It's nice to have and all, but we should really be relying on physical data. That's how we think of it. But consider for a moment that we have the nesting dolls all mixed up. We've labeled them incorrectly. consider that the largest, outermost doll is the higher mind and not the physical mind. It's the one that can see everything. The ego, or physical mind, is the second doll nested within the outer doll. So the only perspective of that physical mind is what is within the confines or walls of the larger doll. The subconscious mind is nested even further within, within the physical mind. With the physical mind taking cues from the subconscious and both of them ignoring or denying the existence of the higher mind, we become severely limited. Meanwhile, there's a whole world outside of the inner doll's perspectives that's going on, unnoticed and unacknowledged, because that world is seen only by the outermost doll, or the higher mind. Imagine the dolls sitting on a table in a room by a large window. They're all nested within each other, so that it appears there's only one doll sitting on the table. The outermost doll can see the table, the entire room, and everything outside the window. But the doll nested within the largest doll can only see the inside of the largest doll. It can only see within the confines of its container. To me, that's like our physical mind. Our physical mind is limited to the confines of our five senses. It's set up that way. There's nothing wrong with that. The problem comes when we think that it's the only mind we have, the only mind we have access to, and that all the information we can access comes from that perspective. We place a huge weight on our ego or physical mind to figure out everything, to make a plan, to consider all possibilities, to steer us towards our goals in the right direction. And it's just not designed to do that. In fact, it's not capable of doing that. Our physical mind is created to work in conjunction and cooperation with the higher mind, which has far more information and a much broader perspective. Our physical mind was never intended to do that. It can't. I believe 100% of our suffering comes from this misunderstanding and from placing this burden on our physical minds to try to make it understand things that it's not capable of understanding by itself, trying to make it control and predict things that it's not capable of controlling and predicting. Whatever area of life you're experiencing discomfort or dissatisfaction in, I would guarantee that it's an area of your life in which you are not using the awareness of your higher mind. When our subconscious, ego, and higher mind are misaligned, when these three disagree and they're not on the same page, we suffer every time. We are multifaceted, multidimensional beings. And until we get that and learn to work within that understanding, we won't be satisfied. It's akin to driving a nail into a board using a screwdriver when you have access to a hammer. You can do it. It'll be messy, frustrating, and take a long time, but the nail might eventually go into the board. But it's more likely that you'll get frustrated, overwhelmed, and give up long before that happens. Just pick up the hammer. That's what it's there for. That's its intended use. And that's what our higher mind is there for. It's intended for our use to navigate being human. So use it. Open up to curiosity and possibility and learn to use it. Thank you for listening to Consciousness Explored. Consciousness Explored is part of the Miracy FM podcast network, which also includes such shows as Once Upon a Business and Neuroscience of Coaching. A very special thanks to Lori Williams for generously sharing her time and expertise with us today. In the show notes, you'll find the link to Lori's website, intuitivespecialists.com. If you'd like to reach out to me, I would love to hear from you. My contact information is also in the show notes or just below on YouTube. I personally read and respond to all emails, and I absolutely love hearing from you guys. To make sure you don't miss great episodes coming up on Consciousness Explored, please follow us on Miracy FM's YouTube channel or your favorite podcast player. And if you enjoyed the show, please leave us a comment or a starred review. It really is the best way to help us get these ideas to more people. Thanks, and I'll see you next time.
Hey, it's Danny Eney again, executive producer at Miracy FM and creator of the Course Freedom Formula, a new program that will walk you through building and launching a successful online course in just 12 weeks. I wanted to give you the link to the program information page again, because enrollment is open for just a few days. I also want to mention that we're offering the program on a pay-what-you-can basis. That means that after you pay a small activation fee, you get to decide what you want to pay for the Course Freedom Formula based on the value that you receive. Doors are only open from May 17th through the 21st, though, so head to miracy.fm/course for more information. If creating more freedom and impact is on your business bucket list for the year, then don't miss out on this opportunity. You'll get the expert guidance and support that you need to build a thriving online course by the end of the summer. Again, the link is miracy.fm/course. That's miracy.fm/course.